Welcome to Everything Co-op, bringing you information on how cooperatives can help improve your quality of life. This show is being sponsored by the National Co-op Bank, NCB. The NCB is dedicated to strengthening communities nationwide for the delivery of banking and financial services for the nation's cooperatives, their members, and other socially responsible organizations. For more information on the power of community ownership, visit ncb.coop. That's ncb.coop. Now stay tuned for your host, Vernon Oakes.
Good morning, everybody. This is Vernon Oakes, and the program is Everything Co-op. And today I have the pleasure, the absolute pleasure, of speaking with Michelle Roth, who's the Senior Director of Government Affairs for the League of Southeastern Credit Unions and Affiliates. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Vernon. Thank you so much for having me. Greetings from Alabama.
Thank you. So are you in Alabama now?
Yes, I'm in Montgomery, our state capital.
Montgomery. And you're in Central Time Zone, so it's 9:30 there.
That's correct.
Okay. So you talk about government affairs. What do you do? What is government affairs?
You sound like my parents. What do you do? I don't get it. So government affairs, that's a broad term. So I would say that my responsibility is to engage lawmakers, community leaders. It could be, you know, elected officials, or it could be folks within the legislative branch or the executive branch, the governor's office, state representatives, state senators, to work with them to build relationships, because that's the primary basis of moving issues forward, and to educate them on issues that are important to credit unions. So within government affairs, my primary responsibility really would be advocacy, to promote what's best for our members and to prevent legislation that might potentially be detrimental or have a negative impact.
So what states does Southeastern Credit Unions represent?
The League of Southeastern Credit Unions, LSCU, has a three-state footprint. We're in Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, and I'm the chief lobbyist for Alabama. And I have some outstanding counterparts in Florida, Georgia, and also on the federal side that work our advocacy as well.
Okay. How many credit unions are represented?
I am proud to have almost 100 credit unions in Alabama.
Okay.
So close to 300 in our three states.
Okay. Now, let's go back and talk a little bit about you, to how did you get here, to what your parents asked you about to be a government affairs person. Okay. Where did you grow up and go to school?
Okay. Back to me. Sure. Mm-hmm. So I am born and raised in Lakeland, Florida, Central Florida. Proud of that. But then I came to the University of Alabama, and that is where I met my husband. We've been married 33 years. And at that time, my husband's from Oklahoma, I'm from Florida, and we both knew that Alabama was where we wanted to be. So we made this our home, and we've raised three girls here who have all stayed in Alabama as well. I'll tell you, my path to where I came in this role, it was just such a beautiful way that it merged and my different career experiences came together. My background is in business, nonprofits, and advocacy. So I've always been motivated with the hope of helping others. When I was in human resources, I focused on training and recruiting and team building. And at the same time, I volunteered for many nonprofits, served on boards and in leadership. And through that, I found an opportunity to serve both as a human resources resource and also to help the needs of nonprofits. So within that, I was a nonprofit consultant focusing on ways that I could help those groups that might not have an internal HR personnel department. I could help them with their planning and succession planning and coaching for employees. Through that consulting, I found led to an opportunity to be a part of an organization called Leadership Alabama. It's an outstanding group that brings together established leaders gives them a 360 perspective of how they can best serve Alabama and all of their, whoever their constituents might be, if it's in a, you know, faith-based or school superintendents or elected officials, whoever they might be. And so my role was program manager to do that. Then that brought me to a position with those relationships statewide to get into advocacy. Most recently, I was executive director of an organization that focused on broadband connectivity to unserved areas in Alabama. And then ultimately, just about a year and a half ago, I was approached by LSCU. When I learned more about credit unions and this role, I knew I was in the right place, because the credit union's philosophy of people helping people and the opportunity to be an advocate for those goals, I knew I was in the right place. So I'm very proud to represent
That's
our members.
Fantastic career. Now, but I want to go all the way back to three daughters.
I'd be happy to tell you about them. How much time do we have?
Let's take 2 minutes or 1 minute apiece. What are they doing? You said they're all in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And do you have any grandchildren?
Wait a minute. Did you know I did?
No.
Because I have a sweet, precious, perfect granddaughter that's only about 4 weeks old.
Four weeks?
Yes. 4 weeks.
Fantastic.
This is breaking news to your audience, Vernon.
Okay.
This is it. This is breaking news. So I have three incredible girls I'm so proud of. All of them are in Alabama, as I mentioned. My oldest just had, actually, they're all in advocacy-related or membership, nonprofit-type roles.
Hmm.
My oldest daughter is with the Women's Foundation of Alabama, and she is motivated and interested in issues that public affairs, public policy, public relations. And she's just had my precious granddaughter, Anna Darby.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have identical twins. They're just 2 years younger. Madeline is in Montgomery, and she'll be married in just a couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
She's with the Alabama Realtors Association, and she does event planning and also supports her legislative process. And her twin sister, Annabelle, was married in December, and she is in legislative state affairs for NASA in Huntsville. So within 5 months, the Ross have been bumping between two weddings and a sweet grandchild and a legislative session.
Fantastic. Okay, so there's a lot of activity in your home, and it looks like with your smile, you enjoy all of it.
Thank you. I do. I'm very fortunate.
Yes. And it sounds like your three daughters haven't fallen far from the tree. That's your activities. So you should have great conversations at your household around dinner whenever you can get them all together.
That's right.
So, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story. Now we're going to go back to what is advocacy. That's what you said you do. What is that?
It's really about so often, when an association, you can bring together a unity of voices. Often you'll get, the greater good of the whole membership allows one voice pulled together. So with advocacy, we take the voice of each credit union and then present it to those who need to learn more. Advocacy is a little bit of sales, some could say, but also it's just about educating. With the credit union story, it's not a tough sell. You just need to let folks know what we're doing. We're focused on members and community. So I need to, when I am in advocacy, I do a couple of things. I pay attention to opportunities that we could promote legislation that's going to help our members. And our members is, my members of the association is the credit unions. And then their members are what other for-profit financial institutions we call customers. So I've got that trickle down of members from the credit unions to their members. So in advocacy, I'm looking out for whatever legislation we might be able to have that would be beneficial to them and their communities. And then I'm also looking peripherally to protect us from anything that might have a negative impact.
So do you know how many members or customers the credit unions represent in Alabama or in all three states?
Yes, let me, I know that, I'm very proud of this. Let's see, bear with me 1 second. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. We have within, in Alabama, we've got 2.7 million 7 million in Florida and 2 million in Georgia. So, and the cost across the country, there's 141 million members. We have an opportunity.
141 million members in all credit unions. When you say across the country,
Across the country, there's about 4,700 credit unions across the country, and within that, you have their membership base to expand there. And so, that's a lot of folks that you can help. You know, we look at there's so many great credit union associations across the country, and so with our peers, we're able to look out for the best interest of all those.
So there's only about 350 million people in the U.S. Do I have that right? 340, 350 million people.
So if now you did not say this would be a test on my civics.
I know that. I know that. And so. And so I'm going from my memory too, which isn't as good because I have the Biden Trump issue. I'm 76, so I don't keep them all up there. But I believe it was 340 million people in the U.S. And so if there's 140 million people that are members of credit unions, almost half or close to half is a lot of
people. I was going to guess that, but I wanted you to go first. That sounds like if my math and your math is coming together, that's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And 11.7 million. So as an advocate representing 11.7 million, and I assume at times all the different leagues get together in the U.S. and you all figure out what are federal kinds of things that you need to do. So you end up representing 141 million people, 4,700 credit unions. That's a lot of people.
Isn't that great to be a part of that? That many people are, you know, that we're looking out for them, and that many people have the opportunity to be a part of a membership that's going to help them financially, to be a part of a financial institution that's going to offer resources and support and financial counseling if needed. You know, we go beyond. It's not just what our members do too. It's not just being a member of the credit union, but it's giving back. So many of our credit unions, I would say all probably, offer volunteer hours and support to their communities. They are resources for the classroom. They offer, you know, they can offer some type of scholarships. They can offer support there. And if anything else, if you come in, they're going to help you. They're going to find a way to make a personal touch to say, what can we do to improve your situation and to help you navigate your financial path, to help your family, and to best take care of what your financial needs might need.
So I'm hearing you say that the credit unions help people. You said people helping people.
So the credit union philosophy is people helping people. I mean, how great is that?
Well, that and growing up in Bluefield, West Virginia, and going with my father to try to borrow money from either an easy credit place or a bank, it never seemed to me that those institutions were trying to help my father or our family. So this is wonderful, people helping people. And you said financially, resources, support, financial counseling, scholarships, and other support. And then the credit union, people that work in credit unions will also volunteer hours in the community. That's phenomenal.
And can I give you I apologize. I was going to say, you know, you mentioned advocacy earlier. I'll give you an example of something that we had an opportunity, some legislation we had an opportunity to be supportive of and move forward. That was financial literacy in the classroom. Passed unanimously in the House and the Senate last year in Alabama. And our goal with this, there would not be a financial benefit in the credit unions. We weren't going to celebrate anything beyond an opportunity to help families. And so what the legislation was is that, I mean, how often have we heard those jokes about, you know, you get out of school and you don't know how to balance your checkbook or write a check, but those life skills you need. So now within this legislation, in 11th and 12th grade, and students who are taking career prep classes are going to have a part of a segment of it, a unit related to financial literacy. It's going to teach them about their FICO score, I mean their credit score, the ways that, you know, how you balance your budget, how you you make those transactions, interest rates, the impact that interest rates can make on the number of payments you make, you know, think, oh, it's only $300 a month. Yeah, for 20 years. Okay. And our hope within this is that they will then be empowered to manage their money and not fall victim of predatory lending. That when you mentioned just a minute ago, I think you said something about a check cashing service. That's, you know, that those are high rates. That's over $400 in interest that some of those charge. And we hope that when students can learn this, then it might even go back, you know, into other generations in their home to protect themselves from not becoming vulnerable to having to make those high interest loans. And so I'm really proud of that. I think, and within that, our credit unions can go to the classroom. We're working with the Department of Education on that. We're volunteering, supporting the teachers and helping with curriculum. And we're also doing things related to, you know, when the students go to, say, FBLA. You remember FBLA and DECA and Future Business Leaders? We're going to those, conferences and helping with judging some of the student events or supporting them with material. So that's an example. While it's advocacy, we're continuing it through the finish line. We're not just getting it, but we're following through.
That is wonderful, and I wish that I had had that kind of training in high school or junior high school or anywhere else, even in college. You have to learn it, at least I had to learn it, just by trial and error. And too often, the trial and error is very costly. Like you said, you could pay 400% interest on payday places or those other predatory lenders. 21% was high at one point. That's what the interest rate was. But in some of these credit institutions, it's much, much higher than that, particularly when you look at all of the fees that they charge. It's predatory is to take. And I want to ask you a question. You said something that caught my interest. What I heard you say was the credit union advocated for this financial literacy in high school, juniors and seniors. Uh-huh. And what I heard you say was that credit unions are not looking to get any financial reward for doing that, particularly in the short term. But I have a sense that credit unions, as well as any institution in our economy, would be much better off if adults, particularly young adults, understood credit, borrowing, asset building, in terms of houses or other things that are that you create wealth in, creating a worker co-op or joining a worker co-op, but different ways of creating assets. I think the whole world would be better off, at least the U.S., Alabama, the 100 credit unions in Alabama, if they had a smarter membership. What do you think about that?
I love everything you just said, Vernon. Thank you. I'm going to take you on the road with me.
Okay.
You nailed it. I mean, and think about, you know, if you've got a peace and a calmness about what's happening in your family financially, you can better serve your family at home. You can spend more time with those kids. You can have the opportunity to support them in their own community work. And when you can put your mind at rest and at ease with those financial woes, there's so much people worry about. Let's help take that off of them so they can, you know, enjoy other things that are happening, so they can go out and do a better job at their, you know, work at their own workplace, so they can be better family members to each other and better neighbors. And share that message. You know, if you need to get a small loan, that's okay. Not everyone has to have high wealth and have this, you know, the riches that are available, but they do need to have resources if they need to get a small loan, or if they need a financial coach and they could go into the credit union and say, okay, help me out. I'm in a financial pickle. I've got myself all tied up in this. Can you help me figure it out? And so, you know, with the high school students are moving up, but this is a, you know, cross-generation issue. It's a fully, you know, diversity of race and geography and education level are all vulnerable to making financial mistakes or concerns or a hope to do a do-over. And right. So if we can put that at ease, we're serving others. It's going to help. It's going to help the whole community.
So I had gotten two master's degrees, had worked a bunch, and I was teaching at Howard marketing, and my boss set me down. We would go to lunch once a week, and he taught me about finances. He taught me about money. And I must have been 39 years old or something, 39, 40. It was wow. amazing. And he called credit the new slave master. Okay. And he
discouraging.
He encouraged me to only get credit if you absolutely had to have it and at the best potential interest rate. Because of if you're able to invest and get interest, I think it was something like if you put away $1,000 a year, you invested $1,000 a year at 10%, in 7 years, you doubled your money. Okay. It was some numbers like that. So I'm not going to, it was, mm-hmm. it was interesting, particularly since we were both into numbers. And it's the opposite was true if you're paying out interest, how the interest that took away your potential of having money to do extra things with. Matter of fact, having money to do your necessary things. If you're paying out a lot of interest, you just don't have the money, and it keeps you in the rut, and it keeps you mentally in stress. And all the things that you said happen. If you're not in stress, all the things that you said happens. And if you're not in financial stress. And I think finances is somewhere between communications and finances, the number one reason for divorces. It's probably one and two, and I don't know which is one and two. But getting this education, and I really appreciate your saying that the league, these credit unions, really advocated for this and got it passed in legislation so that in schools, in the classrooms, in the 11th and 12th grade, these students can get that training. That should make you feel extremely good about your job.
Well, thank you. And you can see why I'm so proud to represent the credit unions, because that's the right thing to do. That legislation, and let me just say, I got to give a big shout out and love to the Alabama legislature who passed it unanimously. They got it. You know, they knew that this was an opportunity to take care of their districts. The governor of Alabama, you know, totally supported financial literacy as well and signed that into law. So while it was one of these things is, you hate to say it's a no-brainer, but it's such a reasonable ask from the legislature. It's such a reasonable opportunity that can't, once it's mandated, that then we know that we can secure this. We did it, we focused on 11th and 12th graders because we've seen in other, you know, across the country, if you do it like in 9th grade or some of his earlier years, it's almost like monopoly money because they're not working yet. And they're not putting the money in their pocket to kind of get it. But when they start working, they see that, oh, wait. Why did all that money come out for taxes? Or, oh, please, I thought I was getting $500. And, you know, so that's where they learn to budge that. And you know, we've got some neat things, too, in the credit union. When we talk about learning that financial management, we have some credit unions that have branches in the schools. And that gives the kids an opportunity to work in the branch. I know, Brenda, I'm looking at you raising your eyebrows. Isn't that great?
Yes.
So it gives them a career opportunity to see financial services, to learn customer service skills, to interact with the students. So the branch is there that the students can put their money in and withdraw, and that really firsthand opportunity of having their own accounts. And then the students learn a career opportunity.
Wow. So have you found in your last job on broadband connectivity, have you found that credit unions in your three states will help to fund or to try to get broadband, really push to get broadband, particularly in rural areas?
I can't speak for Florida and Georgia. I can tell you my experience in Alabama was that broadband connectivity is a priority to leadership and the governor's office and the legislature. While I was at the Broadband Association, it was during COVID, and that was when it just spiked the need for internet to the home became more important than ever. And so it was a scramble to get those connected. And we worked hard on that and worked with the Department of Education to get that, to get those families served. And it's really important. I hope that we can, I hope that all of the country, especially in those rural areas, where there may not be a profit, sometimes it's hard to get those businesses to go there. But I hope those families will get connected. You know, the credit unions are so collaborative in nature. They believe, you know, rising tide raises all boats. And, and I hope the broadband community can do that as well.
So the reason I asked you was that I was in a conference and there was a credit union out of Virginia that funded a solar panel farm.
Okay.
And then they took that into the high school also and got kids jobs and everything and taught them about climate change and solar panels and everything like that. So I was just wondering if the credit unions had gotten into, well, it was solar panels and broadband. Okay. Getting broadband into the home. So they were doing both of those things.
Well, that is a niche I have not been aware of. So I'll say that I cannot speak on behalf of all our credit unions, but I can say that if they were approached by something, an organization or an area that was needed, I feel confident they would at least consider a way that they could support that need.
Yeah, I was blown away with listening to this person talk about the kinds of things they were doing because it's such a huge need.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. If I could find it out, I'll get you their name and number too, because it would be great if other credit unions could see the same thing. It's particularly with rural area. It was, you know, it wasn't in Richmond or larger communities.
The rural area is important.
Yes, very much so. Well, we're going to take our break. And we're talking to Michelle Roth from the League of Southeastern Credit Unions, where she's a senior director of government affairs. And she says she does advocacy. And we talked about last year they promoted and passed financial literacy in high schools for juniors and seniors. So when we come back, Michelle, I would like to talk to about other legislation that you all have either done or are doing. Okay? But we'll be right back. Please don't touch that dial.
News Talk 1450 WOL AM, where information is power.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Vernon Oakes, and the program is Everything Co-op. We're talking about the co-op of credit unions. It is a consumer co-op. That means that the members of the credit union owns the credit union, and they can run for the board of directors and help to set policies. Other consumer credit unions are housing co-ops and rural electric. There's a bunch of consumer co-ops, and as we've talked about, there's 141 million Americans that belong to credit unions. Unfortunately, I found out that, Michelle, that too many people belong to credit unions, but they don't know that they're co-ops. And that's something I would like to see us do more about. That's the fifth principle of cooperation is education, training, and information. And I hear that's basically what you do to legislators is educate them, train them, and give them information about co-ops. But I'd like to see us do more with those 141 million or 10 million people in Alabama to let them know that they are co-ops and the benefits of cooperation. But what I said I would like to do when we get back is talk about other legislation that you have been a part of or is a part of now. So can you give us another example?
Sure. So Alabama is currently in our legislative session. We'll conclude in a few weeks towards the end of May. A piece of legislation that's really important that we've got to watch, and this, you know, I mentioned earlier, we promote legislation that's beneficial, but we also have to do things that are going to protect Alabamians and their financial resources too. So we've seen this across the country. In Alabama, we've had legislation proposed, hasn't been filed yet, but it's been discussed. And what the legislation would do is it would prohibit credit unions from acquiring banks. And so if you'll consider this scenario, that if a smaller community bank wanted to sell, say perhaps it's a third generation family and the great grandfather's not there anymore, and this family now says, you know what, we don't want to be in the banking business. We want to sell this bank. Well, if perhaps that's the only bank in that small town, if that bank closes, there's not going to be a resource for folks to, there's not going to be a financial institution available. So where are they going to bank? So credit unions are often the most likely to go in and offer to buy that bank and its assets. And by doing that, when we do that, then we keep that staff in place. We continue to have those customers who become members an opportunity to have someone in their community. That staff remains and they can stay, they can continue to serve their area. And again, like we talked about earlier, take care of their families. Mm-hmm. So if we weren't allowed to do that, then think of those areas that would have nothing. It's, you know, overreaching beyond the how much we do for the communities and what a valuable asset that is and how we take care of them. Beyond that, it's a free market decision. We need to be able to say if someone wants to sell to whoever it is, you should be able to sell to whoever it might be. We offer, because credit unions can come in there and offer that, we're willing to go to areas that may not be potentially highly profitable, but there's a chance to take care of folks. So, and that's why we go there.
Why would somebody want to prevent credit unions from buying a bank, particularly a community bank in a small rural area?
Well, I feel you on that. I think some folks view it as potential competition, but I would argue that community bankers and banks would be divided on that, because if you want to sell, then you certainly would not want to eliminate any potential buyers.
Right.
If only banks can buy banks, then you're going to get a low. Imagine if you're selling your home and only one person could bid on it. They're probably not going to give you the best offer.
So it might be other bankers.
Yes,
that put this legislation forward. Because they want only banks to buy this place. But if they don't want it, the big bank doesn't want to buy this small bank, then they have no choice but to go under, I would imagine.
Isn't that frustrating? That's not necessary. If we can come in and take care of those folks. It's one of these things that's almost unreasonable or illogical. One, the first concept would be that you prohibit a potential buyer. And second is that you go at risk and not have that community served. We've seen it in some other states, and so nationally we're being protective of this. It's passed in Mississippi and potentially likely in Tennessee. But there is so much importance. I've talked to rural legislators who have said, gosh, if it weren't for the credit unions coming in, that community wouldn't have somewhere to put the resources. I visited a town of Skipperville recently. We have All-In Credit Union there.
Skipperville, Alabama?
Yes, Skipperville, okay. Alabama. And you get a dollar if you can find it on the map.
Okay.
Or if you've ever visited. But that's another great example of a branch that is right there in the community that's staffed by students. And when I talked to the branch manager and then some other folks who were there, they told me that before All-In Credit Union came, there was not a place where they could get a cash withdrawal money. The only place they could get cash out was swiping their card at the Dollar General with a $2.50 charge. Yeah. So you got folks going in who just need $10 cash, and that's a 25% charge. So now that they've come into the community, these folks have a place as a financial resource. So that's why it's so important to go to those areas that are smaller.
So, Michelle, I would like to challenge you to put forth legislation that says that credit unions are the only ones that can buy these small banks if they want to sell, and for these reasons.
Okay, Bernard, when does your campaign begin? Are you running for Senate, Representative? What do we need to do? We're all about supporting folks who carry that mindset of helping others. So, I'll run your campaign. Uh-oh. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be interesting if somebody would put that forth to combat the banks that are trying to do the opposite, because I see where the credit unions can be so much better for people than the banks normally are, because too often banks are extractive. They're in there to see how much they can get to make a profit. They're for-profit organizations, and it's how many many fees that they can get, how it's the highest interest that they can get. And there is nothing about, at least I've never seen a bank that would provide financial literacy to people to get to train them. So there's so much that the credit union can do to help people that it seemed like that would be the legislation to pass. Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, there's a different business model for everybody. And if that's what works, the banks, if they want to give their profit back to the stockholders, okay, that's what they do. What we want to do is give it back to our members. When there's profit, we want to put it back into the credit union so we can either offer them a higher interest rate on what they're saving or a lower interest rate on what they're borrowing. Before I came to the credit unions, I didn't understand the difference between banks and credit unions. But I knew anytime we got a car loan or anything else, credit union was the first we went to because I always offered the best customer service and the best interest rate. So there's some things we find ourselves aligned on with the banks. And, you know, I appreciate my banking friends very much. But I will say that it's my opinion that the credit unions are there for the greater good. And I believe that that goes through from the top CEO leadership down to each, you know, to each branch and the tellers. And then I think that as a member, when you come in there to do a financial transaction, you feel that support. I think you feel that, hey, they're here to help me.
Yep.
And I think in these bigger banks, you lose that. But not that I'm biased or anything, but you and I are going to go on the road, Vernon, and tell our story.
I think you are biased, and I am biased, but there's a reason for the biasness, and that's which of these organizations is better for the customer, which one of them is better for the person that may be barely making it from paycheck to paycheck, and that was what my parents were, paycheck to paycheck. My mother had things like there's more month than money, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, all of those kinds of statements I heard growing up. And there wasn't a lot. I don't even know if there was a credit union in Bluefield, West Virginia at the time. If there was, we weren't a member of it. We didn't know anything about it. My father worked on a railroad, and my grandfather worked in the mines. And so those are extractive industries also. So how much can you? And we shopped at the company store, so you paid more. You could buy on credit, but then that means that you got less in your check. It was constantly more months and money. So credit unions, my bias for them, are there to help people, and particularly people that don't have and want to have, and they can get better ahead with working with the credit union than they mostly can get from working for other institutions, particularly banks. So I'm extreme biased, but that's the reason why.
But we do good stuff. And you know, I think it was when Shakespeare came to visit Alabama, and he said, bragging if you done it. So we do good things, and we follow through to the finish line helping them. And that comes with passing legislation. We ensure that it ultimately gets to serve our members, and then, you know, we're proud of that.
Okay. So we've got two forms of legislation, the financial literacy in high school, and that's what you put forth, and then you're fighting the legislation that wants to prevent credit unions from buying banks. Anything else? Can you have another example?
So I'll tell you something that is really important to our three states. That would be the opportunity to serve communities and municipalities and to accept public deposits. So public deposits would be, say, from a town, a county commission, waterworks, school board. So sometimes you hear them QPD, qualified public deposits. So I'm really proud. My counterpart in Florida, Christopher Hodge, is getting some movement there in Florida. Sydney Serrell, our vice president of advocacy in Georgia, is working hard on getting this message and fighting a lot of other issues as well. And then in Alabama, it's something I think would be really important. So bottom line, what it says is those communities can only put their money in a bank. They can't shop around. Well, that does, you know, as leaders in their community or whatever that might be, they need to be the best stewards of those financial resources. And credit unions can allow them the opportunity to get a greater interest on those deposits or a better interest on a loan that they might have to take. And it's frustrating to us to know that we are in those communities and we can serve them. You know, there was another recently when I was visiting some other rural communities, went to Wadley, Alabama. And because the a bank was for sale, when the bank wanted to close, a credit union purchased them and acquired it and kept those, kept the branch manager and kept everybody there. And then the community still had a place to bank. Well, the mayor of Wadley shared a story with us that now she can't put her town's resources in that credit union that's the only financial institution in town. How frustrating is that? She's got to leave her own town to go deposit her resources around. I'm looking at you quizzical. I know. And it just does not seem reasonable. And that's something that's really important to us. And I don't know, you know, we're going to have to, the banks aren't going to like it. The banks are going to oppose it because right now, back to that one bidder example I said earlier, that puts them in the catbird seat that they get to make all, they can dictate what those rates will be for those folks who want to deposit. So I would love to see that change. So when you and I take our roadshow, that's going to be our next thing, Vernon. So you and I are going to get that done.
So let me understand this. The school board, okay. I guess they have money to make payroll to all of the right. teachers and administrators. Right now, they can only put their money in a bank. They can't put it in a credit union. Do I have it right?
You're right.
So I can see how this could have been put into place 100 years ago. Banks was what was there, and banks had, what do you say it? Banks were safe in that they had a federal government and government insurance. But now there's a whole new 4,500, I think is what you told me, credit unions throughout the U.S. have 141 million depositors or members. And if you get those deposits, you might be able to give the school board or whatever else a higher interest rate. But the more deposits you have, the more loans you can make. And the more, and you can make them at a lower interest rate normally with more deposits. So it helps everybody, it helps the community. It helps the people in the community. Oh, that sounds, oh yeah. How do we fight that one? You say we're going to go on a road? I wouldn't fight that one.
Oh, I know. Isn't it? It's just unreasonable. And, you know, I'm so proud of, I think I'm a good advocate. I'm a good lobbyist. And so are my counterparts across the country and, you know, my right here in Georgia and Florida. But still, when they're, you got the banks fighting it. It's the banks that don't want you to have, you meaning the credit unions, the opportunity. So they don't want to allow those municipal deposits the opportunity. I mean, you're looking at like, you know, you've got, in Florida, universities and some colleges are going to be able to deposit, but then there's still parameters and limits on that. But, you know, you just look at just a small town that might want to deposit or a water board who, you know, keeping those transactions of people paying their bills and people paying the salary. And, yes, it seems unreasonable. But so what we're lobbying against is the interests of the banks would be in opposition to the interest of the credit unions who would bring that legislation. So those would be our opponents. Where we'd find allies in that, where we'd find folks who would agree they should be allowed to, is we get the, if we can get the towns and counties, the League of Municipalities, the county commissioners, the school boards, if we can, you know, we've got to make them aware that we want to help them to bank here.
Okay. I'm sitting here looking at your number one competitor is the bank, are the banks. And the banks have a monopoly on getting these deposits from communities by law. And now they're trying to get a monopoly on buying banks if the banks want to go under. They want the law to say if they sell to banks and not to credit unions. Okay. Got 141 million people to help. How to get more members, your 10 million members in in Alabama to write to the legislators and talk to their school boards and waterworks and city council people to let them know how it benefits the individual member, the community, for credit unions to be able to get these deposits. Sounds like a fascinating story.
It is. And I want to follow up to the finish line. It's going to be, it's a long game. You know, we've got our grassroots and community support is incredible. Our communications team is so strong. They're so good about sending calls to action to our members. Grace Newcomb and her team do a great job doing that. You know, we're going to have to do a call to action. We're going to have to get our credit unions out there, letting their towns know. They want to do it so badly. They continue to say, when we do our legislative survey, what would help you most to help your members? And the opportunity to take public deposit comes at a top. So it's going to have to be start in a phase of, you know, a strategic plan working on awareness first. Because look how knowledgeable you are. Look how aware you are of what's happening. And you were surprised that we couldn't take those deposits. So first we need to let people know, hey, did y'all know? We need to get it where people are talking about it on the bleachers and in Sunday school and, you know, at business lunches. Can y'all, isn't that ridiculous? That kind of thing. We got to get that. We got them talking about that. Then we got to have that time where we sit down with the legislators and they need to know that too. Then we got to get the mayors fired up. So it's going to take a whole bunch of folks who have the opportunity to be heard and help push this the finish line.
So I talked about Principle 5, cooperation principles, is education, training, and information, and that's what you're doing. What about Principle 6, which is cooperation among co-ops? Can you get the rural electric co-ops to help with this process of those two issues to work with their members, the people that have those little meters that run, that they collect money, but getting those folks, and then Georgia, in all of the 13 southern states, but it housed in Georgia right outside of Atlanta, is the Federation of Southern Co-ops, which is a large organization, to get people, and I think they have an Alabama branch. I think they have five different branches in different states. So to get people to really focus on this, and everybody's busy, but it seemed like this would be a good one to put on the plate to work on. These two, I don't know which I like better, but I definitely like the deposits, knowing how they can really help the credit unions and the credit union members. Yeah.
One's proactive and one's defense. You know, it's the same opponent, but for different finish lines. You know, ones that we can continue on the bank purchasing. We just need to continue to, you know, allow free market opportunities for us to support potentially unserved areas. For the other, we need to advocate and get out there and hope that folks can have the best financial resources available to them. So it is. It's a heavy lift because we've got, you know, there's a whole lot more of them as far as muscle and influence and big corporate, you know, a big corporate perspective and out of state folks too. And they'll rally together with that. But let me tell you, we got some strong voices and community leaders who are loyal to our credit unions as well.
So you just told me earlier that you have a 4-week, matter of fact, you said a perfect granddaughter, 4 weeks old. Can you see how this legislation will help her?
Well, and I hope that it will, I do. I hope that it will help, let's say, with the public deposits, sure. Because I hope that then her town and community can put that resource back into education, that I hope that it might help with any tax resources they have, that they can feed that back into the community to improve the quality of life in that town. Sure. I think we all can. You know, I know that she's just going to turn out to be a perfect, flawless, young lady. So, you know, she's, you know, that's kind of a, we know that she's going to shoot for the stars, but I want it for everybody's precious granddaughters. And that's why it's so important. That's why this mission of people helping people. Sure. I care about everybody's little sweet grandbaby.
All right.
Vernon, I got to ask you something.
Please.
What do you do? What are you doing in October? I hear that you're going to get some shout out and love. What's going on in October?
Well, October is co-op month, so we celebrate co-ops. And NCBA, National Co-op Business Association, has Impact Conference that month, the first week. It's also my birthday, and I'll be 77 this October. Oh. And we would be on the air 11 years this October. And
come on, don't bury the lead here. Come on.
Being inducted into the Co-op Hall of Fame on October the 3rd. So,
congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, surprise, pleased, beyond. And so this is the Co-op Hall of Fame, which CDF, Cooperative Development Fund Foundation, puts on. They've been doing it for 50 years. This is the 50th anniversary of the Co-op Hall of Fame. And last year, Maurice Smith was inducted. I don't know if you know Maurice out of North Carolina. He's in the credit union and the Credit Union League of North Carolina. But he was inducted into the Co-op Hall of Fame. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's extremely exciting. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Well, maybe together we pass public deposits. One day I can grow up and be up there with you doing that.
Come on. You can come this year and bring your perfect granddaughter. Come on.
Well, I am. I think that, you know, like I said, I'm really proud to represent the credit unions. I'm so proud of the team that I work with. We, you know, within the league, we do education training and we do membership engagement and advocacy. So, you know, we serve, like, the credit unions serve their members. What the association, the League of Southeastern Credit Unions, wants to do is serve our members. We want to create resources and opportunities for them so that they can do the best job at their branches as well. So, you know, I think that cross mission of the philosophy we have here at the league complements and is parallel to what that credit union goal and objective and philosophy is as well.
All right. So I see you have a couple conferences, one in June, one in August. So you guys are very active. How can somebody reach out to the league?
Well, we have in Alabama, I'm excited that we've got a new website that we're launching. It's Credit Unions Rooted in Alabama. And within that, on that website, we tell our story. We've got some of those videos I mentioned. The mayor of Wadley's in there. And then you can see stuff about the branch and the smaller communities on the school campuses. And otherwise, you know, Michelle Roth, Michelle.Roth. Michelle.Roth at lscu.coop. And, you know, I'd love to answer any questions we can, but anyone at the League of Southeastern Credit Unions is available from the top down. We'd do anything we could to help. Speaking to groups, we're always interested in spreading the word of opportunities for advocacy and also within, resource opportunities to help them in financial counseling or coaching. We can get, if we know what area of the state they're in, anywhere that tri-state footprint, we'll get someone out there to help in the classroom or into community groups, spiritual, faith-based groups. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, we're very active there. So I hope that any of your listeners will reach out to us.
All right. Give them slowly your email address one more time.
Sure. Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E dot Roth, R-O-T-H, at L-S-C-U dot C-O-O-P.
So L-S-C-U dot C-O-O-P is your webpage, and you can contact you with Michelle.Roth at lscu.coop.coop. Okay. Michelle, thank you. Thank you for being on.
This is a joy. Thank you, Vernon. Thank you for letting me share my story and to brag about the League of Southeastern Credit Unions. And I appreciate very much you letting me talk about our issues and what we're working on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And everybody out there, we'll see you next Thursday. Please join us then and live cooperatively. Thank you.
preceding program was paid for by Everything Co-op.